and other inconveniences are of no consequence, for they are overcome by virtue. Just as the brightness of the sun dims all lesser lights, so virtue, by its own greatness, shatters and overwhelms all pains, annoyances, and wrongs, and wherever its radiance reaches, all lights which shine without the help of virtue are extinguished, and inconveniences, when they come in contact with virtue, play no more important a part than does a storm cloud at sea. This can be proved to you by the fact that the good man will hasten unhesitatingly to any noble deed, even though he be confronted by the hangman, the torturer, and the stake. He will persist, regarding not what he must suffer, but what he must do, and he will entrust himself as readily to an honorable deed as he would to a good man. He will consider it advantageous to himself, safe, propitious. And he will hold the same view concerning an honorable deed, even though it be fraught with sorrow and hardship, as concerning a good man who is poor or wasting away in exile. Come now, contrast a good man who is rolling in wealth with a man who has nothing, except that in himself he has all things. They will be equally good, though they experience unequal fortune. This same standard, as I have remarked, is to be applied to things as well as to men. Virtue is just as praiseworthy if it dwells in a sound and free body, as in one which is sickly or in bondage. Therefore, as regards your own virtue also, you will not praise it any more if fortune has favored it by granting you a sound body, than if fortune has endowed you with a body that is crippled in some member, since that would mean rating a master low because he is dressed like a slave. For all those things over which chance holds sway are chattels, money, person, position. They are weak, shifting, prone to perish, and of uncertain tenure. On the other hand, the works of virtue are free and unsubdued, neither more worthy to be sought when fortune treats them kindly, nor less worthy when any adversity weighs upon them. Now, friendship in the case of men corresponds to desirability in the case of things. You would not, I fancy, love a good man if he were rich, any more than if he were poor, nor would you love a strong and muscular person more than one who is slender and of delicate constitution. Accordingly, neither will you seek or love a good thing that is mirthful and tranquil, more than one that is full of perplexity and toil. Or, if you do this, you will, in the case of two equally good men, care more for him who is neat and well-groomed than for him who is dirty and unkempt. You would next go so far as to care more for a good man who is sound in all his limbs and without blemish, than for one who is weak or purblind. And gradually your fastidiousness would reach such a point that, of two equally just and prudent men, you would choose him who has long, curling hair. Whenever the virtue in each one is equal, the inequality in their other attributes is not apparent. For all other things are not parts, but merely accessories. Would any man judge his children so unfairly as to care more for a healthy son than for one who was sickly, or for a tall child of unusual stature, more than for one who was short or of middling height? Wild beasts show no favoritism among their offspring. They lie down in order to suckle all alike. Birds make fair distribution of their food. Ulysses hastens back to the rocks of his Ithaca, as eagerly as Agamemnon speeds to the kingly walls of Mycenae. For no man loves his native land because it is great. He loves it because it is his own. And what is the purpose of all this? That you may know that virtue regards all her works in the same light, as if they were her children, showing equal kindness to all, and still deeper kindness to those which encounter hardships. For even parents lean with more affection towards those of their offspring for whom they feel pity. Virtue, too, does not necessarily love more deeply those of her works whom she beholds in trouble and under heavy burdens, but, like good parents, she gives them more of her fostering care. Why is no good greater than any other good? It is because nothing can be more fitting than that which is fitting, and nothing more level than that which is level. You cannot say that one thing is more equal to a given object than another thing. Hence, also, nothing is more honorable than that which is honorable. Accordingly, if all the virtues are by nature equal, the three varieties of goods are equal. This is what I mean. There is an equality between feeling joy with self-control and suffering pain with self-control. The joy in the one case does not surpass in the other the steadfastness of soul that gulps down the groan when the victim is in the clutches of the torturer. Goods of the first kind are desirable, while those of the second are worthy of admiration. And in each case, they are nonetheless equal, because whatever inconvenience attaches to the latter is compensated by the qualities of the good, which is so much greater. Any man who believes them to be unequal is turning away from the virtues themselves and is surveying mere externals. True goods have the same weight and the same width. The spurious sort contain much emptiness. Hence, when they are weighed in the balance, they are found wanting, although they look imposing and grand to the gaze. Yes, my dear Lucilius, the good which true reason approves is solid and everlasting. It strengthens the spirit and exalts it, so that it will always be on the heights. But those things which are thoughtlessly praised, and are goods in the opinion of the mob, merely puff us up with empty joy. And again, those things which are feared as if they were evils, merely inspire trepidation in men's minds, for the mind is disturbed